So those hydrox chlorides in terms cost is cost a little more than sulfate or oxide, but it's still very economical way compared to the organic trace minerals with a higher bioavailability and better absorption.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. Kemin invites you to optimize animal feed quality and safety with our portfolio of solutions. Learn more at kemin.com/ag. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge.
Welcome to the Feed Science Podcast. I'm Adam Farrenholz, coming to you from North Carolina State University in our Animal Food Manufacturing and Feed Milling program here. Thanks for joining us. On behalf of Wyzenetics, we always appreciate our audience checking in with us on your podcast vehicle of choice or on YouTube. Please do like, subscribe, all that good stuff, and let us know in comments what you like about the podcast, what other things you'd like to see, so that we can keep the content coming to you in a way that you're interested in. Our guest today should be of a lot of interest to folks that are doing anything related to premixes that have to do with vitamins and trace minerals, because that's what we're going to be talking about, and some of the things to know when we're using those types of products. My guest is Dr. Charles Chin. He is a technical consultant. He's been in the industry. He's got about 30 years of experience in research, R&D, animal nutrition, livestock, regulatory affairs, all of those good things. So should be a really interesting conversation today. Dr. Chin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's I know you've done these podcasts with Wyzenetics a couple times, but we've always got new listeners. We keep that audience growing. So if you wouldn't mind, give a little bit more of your background and what it is you're working on to our audience.
Okay. I live in Manitoba, Winnipeg. It's kind of Midwest. My career's has four phases. Not ended yet, but I started phase one as a university faculty, teaching and supervise undergrad and master students. Now phase two was moved to North America and doing the research and also the pig farming. And phase three became a professional nutritionist on monogastric for 15 years. Now I'm in phase four as the independent consultant, offering technical service to private companies, to no profit, no government organizations, and also offering some technical views to feed additive companies.
Very good. So phase four is get to be your own boss. That's phase four, right?
Yeah, I've been at this about 10 years. I pretty much enjoy it.
Feed formulation software is stuck in the past. Most tools haven't evolved beyond basic least cost optimization. A DietForge changes that. It's an AI-powered platform with nonlinear ingredient modeling for enzymes and additives, cost per gain and maximum profit optimization, and real-time collaboration like Google Docs for nutrition. Every recommendation is grounded in world-class research, built for modern nutritionists who need more than legacy desktop software can deliver. Work seamlessly with your team and optimize the way modern operations demand. Try DietForge.ai free today. Feed formulation, finally modernized.
Very good. Very good. So our topic of discussion today is we're going to talk about trace minerals and vitamins. And let's just start off, let's start off at the bottom line. What is, when we think about putting vitamins and trace minerals, we know they're important. We know the animals have to have them. How do we think about their inclusion as it relates to the combination of what the animal needs and what it costs? Because we know that these are expensive things to put into the ration. So we might as well start right there with the money.
Essential nutrients for vitamin and minerals. So it is required on a daily basis for the animal. And vitamins includes A, D, E, B, C, H. And minerals are copper, zinc, manganese, iron, chromium, cobalt, selenium, and iodine. That's normally we use for young animals. Maybe in the grower finishing phase, we use less mineral vitamins. But still, if we calculate all those in the compositions of a complete feed, vitamins normally take about 0.5 to 1.5% of total cost for complete ration, and trace minerals between 1.5 to 3%. It depends which forms of the trace minerals you have in the ration. Take them total, the cost around 3 to 4% in the complete rations.
All right, so if it's 3 to 4...
Yeah, for the young animals, normally require more for support of the growth. And genetic stocks, normally we use a high inclusion of trace mineral vitamins.
Makes sense. All right, so we're talking 3 to 4% of the inclusion rate of these products. How about the amount of cost of the diet? How, because it's going to be significantly more than 3 to 4% of the cost of the diet is going to come from these types of products, which is one of the reasons that we want to make sure that we manage them so well. So rough numbers, what do we think the cost of these in a diet is going to be?
Yeah, most concentrated inclusion I had experience is between 2% to 2.5, 0.2 to 0.5%, means 2 kg or 2.5 kg in a ton of complete feed. Cost-wise, between 3 to 4% of the total cost in complete ration.
Okay, that might have been my mistake there. Got that confused. So 3 to 4% of the total cost of the ration. Obviously, yeah, that makes sense. A significantly lower amount of the inclusion of that. Got my decimals wrong there. That was my fault. Yeah. Throw my hand up. Say that one was my fault. All right. So relatively low inclusion, but compared to their inclusion amount, a relatively high amount of cost, which means that we really need to do a good job of managing them. And, you know, we've talked with other people in the in some of these podcasts when we've talked to folks in the feed mills and things about the things that we will do in the mill ourselves to make sure that our inclusions are correct, weighing them out by hand properly, or weighing them using systems, micro ingredient systems, and making sure that those are really dialed in so that we're not wasting any kind of money there. But there's other things that go along with that as well, and that's making sure that the minerals and the vitamins that we're putting in are in fact as potent as they are supposed to be. One thing that I think would be an interesting place to start on that discussion is all these different trace minerals that we have. It used to be not that long ago that you got cobalt and it was cobalt, or selenium was selenium. And then we've got all these different ways that these trace minerals are developed. And we've got selenium yeasts and these other kind of things. And we have organic trace minerals and we have chelated trace minerals. So can you speak a little bit to what are the different sources of trace minerals that we actually have on the market today?
Really, we look into the trace minerals. I look into the physical or the chemical properties. If you look in the structure of chemical, the trace minerals always classifies two kinds. One is inorganic trace minerals. It forms oxide or sulfate, which minerals, the mineral and bonded with ionic bond, or we call it, most are divalent bond. Another is organic trace minerals. Organic trace minerals, we can quite often see in the marketplace is glycinates, propionates, amino acid complex, methylene hydroxy, analog chelates, and recently we saw polysaccharide chelates as well, but not very popular at the moment. But we do see the publications on the paper, peer-reviewed papers to prove the efficacy and the stability. For an organic trace minerals, this minerals is covalent bond with amino acids, with the right ratio. Sometimes 1/1, sometimes 2/1 means two amino acids bonded with one trace minerals. Some for amino acid complex, which is a bunch of the amino acids bonded with one or two trace minerals. Between inorganic and organic trace mineral, there are new kinds. It's not new, but has been in the market 10, 15 years. It's called hydroxychlorides, which is a covalent bond, building the trace minerals with hydroxyl group. Chemically, it is inorganic. But looking into the functionality, it's just behave like organic trace mineral, quite stable, low solubility in the water, and less an antagonist between divalent minerals. So those hydroxychlorides, in terms cost, is cost a little more than sulfate or oxide, but it's still very economical way compared to the organic trace minerals with a higher bioavailability and better absorption.
So is that the primary advantage then of going to those products, is that higher bioavailability? That's the primary reason from a nutritional perspective that we would be willing to spend a little bit extra on getting them into our formulations?
Yeah, exactly. And also there's a trend, industry adopt the trend really well, considering suspability and discharge to the manure, get into the field, less damage to soil ecosystem.
Okay, so we're spending a little bit more, but we're checking off some boxes on better animal performance, which at the end of the day, perhaps on a looking at the amount we're spending on our feed ingredients versus the performance, may actually be more beneficial, obviously. Otherwise we probably wouldn't be doing it. But we also have a sustainability checkbox there as well, that we can say we're also making sure that anything that does pass through the animal, we're not likely to see that getting into the water supply and into the fertilizing and all that other kind of stuff, and on the groundwater in the fields and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And also recently I saw some data for life cycle assessment for those trace minerals. Apparently, give you the data, you can measure how the impact to the environment. For example, CO2 equivalent per kg of the product you consume when you manufacture this kind of products. I believe in the future, like feed formulations, every ton of complete feed, we're looking to the CO2 equivalents as well. Just like you buy airplane tickets, you can see the passage, every passage, how much CO2 produced by this plane, by this travel or by this trip.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's going to be, you know, I think we'll see that at, you know, the consumers will be interested in that kind of information, and therefore it'll come up the chain to the people that are producing the feed, selling the ingredients, all of that. We'll be looking at, okay, when someone potentially goes and buys this meat, milk, or egg product, one of the things they'll want to know is what it's doing as far as an impact on the environment, and therefore having some idea of all these life cycle assessments of all these different ingredients that we've got going in will become necessary. And so it's, you know, our choice of minerals is one of those things that could play a role.
Exactly.
Got it.
Yeah. That's our role as well.
Yeah. For sure. Again, my guest today is Dr. Charles Chin. He's a consultant in the feed industry, and we're talking about trace minerals and vitamins. So one thing that those of us that are making feed know very, very well, and sometimes it can almost be frustrating because of the amount of ingredients we're expecting to try to handle inside the mill, is that more often than not, at least in commercial feed production versus maybe some on-farm where we're trying to deal with a single product, but in commercial feed production, I most often have a trace mineral premix and I have a vitamin premix. And the reason for that has some to do with how they're manufactured, but it also has to do with these interactions that occur, right? Especially when they're stored together. Could you speak a little bit as to like what goes on when we have these trace minerals and especially the fat soluble vitamins, and they're together, what's actually potentially going to happen with those products when they're mixed?
All right. So those interactions between trace minerals and fat soluble vitamins like A, D, E, and K primarily involves oxidation reduction reactions and the competitive absorption and mineral-induced degradations. There are two ways to cause this damage. First way is peroxidant minerals. That's the direction of oxidation of fat-soluble vitamins. For example, divalent copper, zinc, or iron undergo Fitton and Haber-Weiss reactions. Those reactions generating reactive oxygen species, we call the ROS, like hydroxyl radicals. Those are free radicals. They are able to attack fat-soluble vitamins, particularly vitamin A, D, and E, that leading to their oxidative degradations. The second way is indirect effects. Like zinc for copper displacement and oxidant protections, because zinc always compete with copper in textile observations. Meantime, excess zinc has caused copper deficiency, which leads to the reduced cellular placements and the increased oxidative stress. For itself, zinc also has the role to play as the antioxidant. If deficiency in zinc or the zinc functionality is impaired, it's going to reduce the SOD activity. SOD, we know, it's helped to protect fat-soluble vitamins. If the reduced SOD activity, vitamin protection for fat-soluble vitamins is going to be reduced as well. So that's kind of the interaction between trace mineral and vitamins. Normally, we're speaking about zinc, copper, iron, and manganese. We have some data to show how severe those damage with different trace minerals, sulfate, hydroxychloride, glycinates, and MHAs. I dig into lots of data recently to compile a few of the, just some of the rules of the range, the damage to the vitamin A, D, E. For example, copper, speaking to we A, D, and A, E with 120 days of storage, which is 4 months, we saw sulfate, hydroxychloride, glycinates, MHAs damage to the A, D, and E per month. Their activity lost but between 9 to 11% from sulfate, 6 to 8% from hydroxychloride, glycinates also 6 to 8%. MHAs have the less damage to vitamin A, D, E during the 120 days in the storage, between 4 to 6% per month, the activity loss per month.
Got it. All right. So we're adding even more, evidence as to some of these benefits of these organic trace minerals, the non-sulfate, non-oxide, inorganic trace minerals, right? Because as you've just said, we've talked already about the animal absorbs them better. We have some sustainability things that help us out. And now you've just shared data that says we've got a pretty significant improvement in the loss of fat soluble vitamins over a 4 month storage period when we're including these versus, or these organic types versus things like the oxides and the sulfates.
And we just give the loss rate per month for copper. Zinc has the similar trend of the damage. For sulfate, around 10%. Hydroxychloride, between 6 to 8. Glycinates, and also 5 to 6%. MHA is still very low, around 5%, between those four forms of trace minerals. those zinc and copper. Among the vitamin A, D, E, and K, it seems divalent trace minerals from sulfate has the most damage. MHAs has less damage. But vitamin A and D lost the most. E seems better, has a better stability than A and D.
Okay.
It seems iron and manganese not very sensitive to those fat-soluble vitamins. It's still lost, but not that much like zinc and copper.
Okay, so we know we're doing better if we use some of those alternative newer to the market, newer being relative, obviously some of them have been around a while now, vitamin sources when we are mixing them. And I guess one question I have in the example you're talking about, you're talking about in a situation where they're both present together in a premix, right? We're not talking about in finished or complete feed. We're talking about when they're combined in a premix directly, correct? Yeah. Okay. Even then, while it's significantly better, we are still having some amount of loss, which should give everybody the idea that when you combine these products into a premix together, there will be some amount of loss. And so you need to consider that when doing things like formulation and planning, purchasing and storage and all of that sort of thing, because if you try to buy a premix that's got both vitamins and trace minerals in it, if the trace mineral sources are one of these organic types, it's going to be better. But still, if you try to store it for 6 months, there's going to be a potential significant loss of vitamin activity there. I know in some cases, because especially in maybe smaller facilities or again on farm, we like to buy premixes that have even more things in them. Maybe I'm buying like a type B type premix or base mix that's got vitamins, trace minerals, medications, enzymes, probiotics, all this other stuff in there. Do these other products, especially maybe the enzymes, the probiotics, the prebiotics, do they have reactions with trace minerals as well?
Exactly. Yes, absolutely. For enzymes, that's the most cost, I think, in the total rations. We have some data to explain how much we lost for the enzyme activities. Theoretically, interference between enzyme and trace minerals have three ways. First way, the trace mineral oxidate the enzyme activity site. For example, divalent coppers and zinc precipitate in Fulton-Haber waste reactions, generating hydroxy radicals that cause the degrading of the enzyme activity. And then zinc is less redox active, but it can directly promote oxidation if displace copper for protective malaproteins, for example, called ceruloplasmin. And the second way is those trace minerals compete a binding site for a cationized substrate. For example, phytase enzyme performs, requires some free amino acid residues for phosphate hydrolysis. Copper and zinc, they are able to kill it, those residues. So they are blocking the substrate access to those enzymes. Protease is another way. They also depend some of amino acid residues like serine, histidine, and metal cofactors. So zinc compete with those native metal cofactors reduce the enzyme activity. The third way is disrupt the enzyme folding and stability. Enzyme needed to be configured to figure out the right configuration to attach with substrate and binding the exactly site. So excess zinc or excess copper is able to bind to the new catalytic sites, inducing the conformation changes. And also aggregated enzymes by cross-linking that reduce enzyme activities. Most time, we look into the interface between trace minerals, phytase, trace minerals, and proteinase. There's also some data for xanolase as well, because we're using, in North America, Midwest, we quite often use wheat barley. All those high need xanolase.
We do have mechanisms by which those trace minerals can interfere and then cause some issues when they are interacting it together in a premix type of a situation. All right, so we know now that if we've got trace minerals and vitamins, especially the fat solubles, trace minerals, enzymes, and they're in the same thing. They're in the same premix. We can have some issues. We know that the organic trace minerals are at least a little, in some cases, rather significantly less damaging, less inhibitory towards the vitamins. So that's a positive, but still over a significant amount of storage time that we could have a degradation of 4% a month or so, which, you know, if we do it for 6 months, we've lost 25% of our vitamin activity there. So I think then the very last question that will kind of close out the podcast is, which is probably the most important, is how do we prevent this nutrient loss in the premix beyond just get your premixes? If they're going to be vitamin trace mineral combined, get them and use them as absolutely rapidly as possible. That one seems relatively obvious, right? You know, get it, gets fresh and just immediately use it. But that's not always practical based on how we buy it, on how we purchase them. So what other prevention steps and things should we be thinking about in order to not have that nutrient loss?
Yeah, exactly. First, speaking of the phytase rotations, I have data to show that give you some ideas how much we lost. I will study for 45 days storage with control. There's no added trace minerals. We observed 5%, still 5% loss for phytase activity. With sulfate zinc, we lost about 35%. And zinc oxide, phytase activity lost about 30%. With glycinates, lost about 20. MHA, we observed that 10% of phytase activity lost during 45 days period of storage. This kind of, we see there are some publications, double dose, overdose of the phytase. That might be the degradation of phytase itself. We saw the positive response from the animals, but we do not haven't confirmed the data yet. That's I'm guessing. And we have a study in micros, in microliters, just speaking 5 kg micro. We use 5 kg per ton of complete feed. With inorganic trace minerals, we in 90 days of storage, inorganic trace minerals cause about 30% of loss phytase activity. Glycinates lost about 5%. MHAs lost only 4%.
That's a big difference, and it's potentially a lot at the high end.
Yeah, exactly. For protease in 5 kg micros, inorganic trace minerals lost about 32%. Proteinase and glycinase lost about 20%. MHAs only lost 3%.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's a recent study in 2024. Xanolase, sulfate cost about over 50% of loss of xanolase in 90 days of storage. And hydroxychlorides lost about 25%. So combine those loss from interactions between trace mineral, vitamin, and enzymes. The lost, my assumption estimates, is around half dollar to $1 per ton of complete ration.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty significant. That's a pretty significant number in the way that we talk about it.
Yeah, and also with the difference between, also the moisture makes a difference as well. High moisture products for the micro or for the premix cause more damage.
So when we're talking about the carriers being used in the different premixes that we're using between corn cobs and rice hulls and limestone and all these different carriers that we use, and mineral oil obviously goes in there, although that doesn't bring in moisture. But we have these choices of carriers that we use, and if it's something that's going to bring in moisture in it, we're just going to exacerbate the potential damage that we're seeing.
Yeah, exactly.
So it sounds like from the standpoint of wanting to make sure that we don't have these interactions that degrade our fat-soluble vitamins, that don't potentially harm our enzymes, the options would include things like, first of all, not mixing them at all. Having separate premixes is a good place to start whenever possible. So that would kind of solve a lot of it. We'll still get some degradation over time, but...
Yeah, I have some tips to answer your question to prevent interaction between vitamins and trace minerals. First, we separate trace mineral and vitamins until we mix in the complete ration. The second is shorten the storage period durations. Keep as less than a month, that might be ideal. The third is keep the micro or premix dry as possible. And the fourth is balance out zinc and copper ratio. We didn't think of that much before as a nutritionist because excess zinc cause deficit of the copper and speed up the oxidative stress, which cause more damage or jeopardize to fat-soluble vitamins, like enzymes. And lastly, not least, is make smart choice for trace minerals. Put on the sustainability as a perspective. And considering bioavailability and absorption, discharge, and excretions as well. So we use less for the more.
That all makes really good sense. I love those five. I've sat here and I've written them down. We're gonna keep those in mind when we chat with people about this kind of stuff. I do want to go just real quick back on the number four. So you're gonna balance the copper and the zinc in order to reduce that oxidative stress and get it to the appropriate ratio. Does that mean the potential of, for the sake of the animal potentially being willing to have a standalone zinc or a standalone copper source to go along with your premixes so that you can get the right balance nutritionally for the animal? Or can you usually do both within the premix, get the right balance for reducing the oxidative stress in the premix and not losing the vitamins, the enzymes, et cetera, and still meet the animal? Or do we probably need a standalone source of copper or zinc to fine tune the nutrition?
Normally, we're industry practice is we mix them together when we have the micro or the premix. But on farm levels, I saw there you have different source of the copper or the zinc for either using the growth promote or combat with the bacteria challenge.
Yep. Very good. This is really interesting stuff. I think, and as we talked a little bit offline before we were starting, I think this is a really interesting topic for, the folks in the feed mills to understand, hey, why do we have all these separate kind of premixes? Sometimes it's because that way we don't have things degrading as they sit in storage. It's obviously important for the nutritionists to understand so that they are making, as you said, the best possible choices on selection of premixes and how they're designing their premixes or requesting them to be made. And it's also really important from the standpoint of the producers to understand why maybe the nutritionist has made a particular decision, and that it might have to do with long-term viability of the ordering chain and how long we can store these premixes and what's happening with sustainability. This is something that could impact everybody across that animal food production environment is understanding why we're making these decisions can really help us understand why maybe somebody else is doing something that logistically we feel isn't efficient, but at the end of the day, it actually is. And I think this plays a lot into that. Yeah.
So we have to take the holistic approach to start from sourcing the right form of trace mineral vitamins and well manage the inventory through the process and logistic until the feed is made, is eaten by the animals at the right time, the right amount.
Holistic's the perfect word. That's the goal, and I'm glad that's the word you used. I think that's really important for everybody to understand. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. Again, my guest has been Dr. Charles Chin. He is a technical consultant, been in the feed industry for 30 years. He mentioned he's been in academia. He's been in the industry. He's now his own boss, doing consulting work for the last 10 years or so on the animal nutrition, livestock, R&D, regulatory affairs. Working there in Manitoba, Canada. Charles, we really appreciate your time today. I've enjoyed the conversation.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. My pleasure. Again, I'm Adam Farinolds, North Carolina State University. And on behalf of Wisenetics, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. And we will talk to you the next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.